Well, not till I'm 90?
I don't either.
Yes. Thank you, dear.
I've never have thought that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's picking up just fine, as a matter of fact. Let's see what it's doing for me.
Thank you, dear.
Oh, okay.
I'm making it for Donna.
As a matter of fact, all right. I don't know whether the microphone's going to pick you up or not, hon, but I'll just try to keep track here.
Okay.
Oh,
now.
You can stay and listen if you want to.
All right. She doesn't want to hear what she might hear.
No. These ladies are craftspeople who are working with us here at the Florida Folk Festival this year. As you're all aware, we're featuring the Menorcans and the Menorcan heritage of Florida this year. And I assume by now that all of you are with us who know what that is. I have some idea. Who knows in the front row, huh? Okay. All right. That simply means that these people are members of a group, descendants of a group, who were brought to Florida by the British. And Florida was held by the British from 1763 until 1784, all right, between the first and second Spanish occupations. The people who came, this particular group, are called Menorcans, even though they weren't made up entirely of Menorcans. They were slightly over 1,400 indentured servants who were Menorcans, Majorcans, mainland Italians, Corsicans, and Greeks from the Levant. But the majority of the group was Menorcans, and their descendants are known today by the one term, Menorcans. The colony lasted from 1768 until 1777, and it is called New Smyrna, because the man who started it was married to a woman from Smyrna in Asia Minor, and they gave the colony that name. When the colony failed in 77, the majority of the survivors, and they were survivors in that group, moved to St. Augustine, and their descendants have been in St. Augustine and North Florida ever since. And we're celebrating that group this weekend, and we're taking a closer look at a number of the customs, the traditions, the folkways, the foodways that are associated with this group. And we understand, of course, that what we're discussing here is to some extent an amalgam. It's an evolution of Mediterranean styles and an admixture of Florida cracker styles, all right?
Oh, yes, don't leave out the cracker.
Don't leave out the crackers, all right?
Very important.
Okay, so just for the tape, let me say that this is Saturday, May the...
28th.
Oh, is this the 28th? I've lost
the
date.
It's the 28th.
Okay, and we're here at White Springs this afternoon with Pam Solano and Teresa Pacetti.
Thelma Pacetti.
Thelma, I beg your pardon. Thelma Pacetti and Teresa Griffin and Hunger Saggy. All right. And we want to talk to each one of them a little bit about the handcrafts that they're practicing and how they learned it. And let me just start and go through each one of you and ask you, hon, tell me first, what you're doing is palmetto braiding?
Or? Yes, it is.
All right. And where did you learn to do this?
I learned, many, many of us in St. Augustine learned from Eileen Cunning, who is a very elderly lady. She learned from the Sisters of St. Joseph, who came to St. Augustine in the late 1860s from France, Le Pieux in France. We don't know if the nuns brought it from France, or if the Menorcan ladies learned it right there at home, or if it came from another source. But as of now, that's as far back as we've traced it, and the nuns are looking into that history right now.
Well, I would venture to say that you're going to find an admixture there also. We know from documentary evidence that palmetto braiding was done for hats in Florida in the 18th century.
Yes, it was.
As a matter of fact, hats were being exported to Cuba. They were a big item here in Florida. And consequently, I'm sure that when the nuns came with their own system, their own unique braiding system, that it was just amalgamated into other Mediterranean traditions.
That's a very good guess.
So we're finding this. My grandfather, as a matter of fact, made a living cutting palmetto.
Oh, did he?
And I wondered for years how anybody in God's green earth could make a living cutting palmetto.
Well, the company that sells these palms that we bought, the buyers from St. Augustine have been in this business for a long, long time, and they ship palms all over the country and even out of the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you suppose that those palms are all being used for altar decoration pieces, which is what yours are, what you're
I would say here? 99% of them are.
And for the blessed palms?
The blessed palms, yes. They're distributed on Palm Sunday, of course. But there are three different Palm Sundays. The Catholics have one, the Greeks have another, which is right in this time period.
Ah.
And there's still another church that celebrates Palm Sunday at another time. So they're cutting palms quite a bit. Then when it comes to summertime, though, the heart of the palm is no longer there, so there's nothing to cut. Then they wait again till the next year in the spring.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, again, how did you learn to do this now?
I learned it from Eileen Cunning, learned it from the nuns.
From the nuns.
And we do this once a year for Palm Sunday at the Cathedral in St. Augustine.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Very good. Now, Teresa, what you've been doing for us this weekend is Spanish drawn work, right?
Spanish, yes, ma'am.
And would you also call this filet lace that you're doing? Is this a form of filet?
Filet. Yes. You put filet in gumbo.
No, that's the wrong root.
Yes, well, this is filet.
And you're doing filet on top of drawn work? Is that what it is?
No, it all goes together.
Oh, you have to draw the threads first.
Okay, see? Want me to hold these photographs for you?
Yes.
You tell us what you're doing here and describe it for us.
Well, you pull that pattern. You find whatever size pattern you have to right. count the threads.
Now, you're working on a piece of linen.
Right. Yes.
That's right.
Well,
right.
And then you have to pull three threads and leave three of the length of whatever you're going to put the pattern in.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to go the opposite way and pull three and leave three to leave that little, square there.
All right,
there.
So you're making a square grid out of those by pulling
yes,
the threads,
ma'am.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. And then you go back and you have to whip each one of those little tiny squares. Each square is whipped. See,
right.
And it goes across, makes a zigzag
diagonal.
Across that diagonal, across that work.
Oh, good
you
dream.
Can tell what's dead and what isn't.
I sure can, as a matter of fact. And you can use a number of different patterns to whip those threads,
any
right?
kind of a...
No.
Well, no,
no.
Ma'am. Not
no. No, this is the same thing. This is the different pattern.
This is the pattern, and you have to... I go by different patterns I've got. You can go a scroll, or you can go little roses you can make in there, and all kinds. This is... Ponce? No. I can't think what that is.
Some kind Poncetta. Of rose.
Poncetta. No, it wasn't.
No, that's not a
Easter lily or something.
Oh.
I think they said it was Easter lily or something. I don't know what it was, but anyhow. And that's how it's did. And then you start to fill in. You have to start. See, you count two. You never start it right jammed up to the cloth.
To the corner.
You always go leave two.
Uh-huh.
Two little holes from there and start your pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start your pattern in this corner and make so much, and then if you're making another, you know, on the opposite side, start and make it there where it'll be even. It'll work and then work towards the center.
Would you ever use a color for the filet on top of this grid or not?
You could, but it's pretty. But
all
they
right.
wouldn't let you do it in the Woman's Exchange where I worked for.
They wouldn't let you do that.
Oh, no,
all right,
ma'am.
We're going to come back and talk about the Women's Exchange in just a little bit. Tell me how you learned to do this, though.
My aunt Capo,
uh-huh.
Laura Capo in St. Augustine, learned me years ago. But then we wanted to work for the Women's Exchange, and they wouldn't let us put any work in until we took patterns, and I mean took lessons.
Right.
And that old lady there is showing us how to do it.
She's
giving us the lessons for it.
Okay. The Women's Exchange is a building in St. Augustine that was a Spanish home, all right? Has been deeded, I believe, to the city of St. Augustine
yes.
now, right? And
yes.
the Women's Exchange runs the building,
mm-hmm.
and it has served for many years, for most of the 20th century in St. Augustine, as an outlet for handcrafts in the city, all right? Excuse me, for things like dattle pepper jelly and drawn work.
Yeah,
and
all kinds of things.
There. And then they have a luncheon every Thursday during the winter season.
Yeah.
Don't leave out the luncheon.
And you can go inside this beautiful building and have
yeah,
lunch.
And look. And you can go all around, go upstairs and all and see the beds and all, whoever it belonged to a long years ago. Oh, I have been up there to see all the things, this, how it was built, the old fireplaces and everything.
Do you have any idea how your aunt learned to do that? Was
no,
it
ma'am.
Something that she learned in her
I
family?
Imagine she did, yes, ma'am, because she learned me even tatting and all kind of, crochet and everything.
So you were learned in there, you were taught in the home to do a number
yes.
of these handcrafts.
Yes, ma'am, right. By my aunt.
And this is very much a Spanish tradition also to teach the women how to do,
yes.
how to use their hands. Drawn work, as a matter of fact, was a very strong, very much like, very strong Spanish tradition.
Uh-huh.
Far predated the 18th century. Do you ever do any black work? Do you know Spanish black work?
No, ma'am.
You ever do that?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Okay.
What is that?
Well, it's a black embroidery, but it's a black on black.
Oh,
it's a very
like for mantilla?
No,
you
can put it on lace, but you do it primarily on a linen or on a cotton, but it's black on black, and it's a very
I bet it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, that's a nice one, as a matter of fact. All right, and
Thelma
Pacetti. All right, Thelma, you're doing tatting
yes.
today, right?
And you want to know how I learned to tat?
I'd love to know.
Well, when I was in the 8th grade in grammar school, one of the homeliest girls that I have ever seen in my life came to school one day.
I wasn't there.
No, you weren't. And no one, we had double desks, and no one would ask her to sit with them. And I always had to sit on the front seat because I had bad eyes, and I had to sit near the teacher, near the board.
You talk so much.
Well, that'll come later.
That could cover any Menorcan, and so, you know it.
Now, I'm not Menorcan. I'm just, I married into the Menorcan family. See, I grew up in Georgia. Anyway, I went home at noon.
It's all right. You had the good sense to move to Florida.
Yes, I did. And my mother says, well, why don't you ask her to sit with you? And I said, all right, I will. So I went back and I said, Annie Mae, would you like to sit with me? And she said, yes. So a few days later, she brought out a tatting shuttle. And I said, oh, Annie Mae, can you tat? Yes. Will you teach me? Yes. So we'd put our heads down on the desk, you know. As long as we were quiet, the teacher didn't bother us. So I said, she says, but I don't have time. It takes all my time to study. I said, oh, I'll help you with your lessons. I've always been a teacher. And I said, I'll help you with your lessons. You teach me to tat. So I went home that night, and I told my mother, and I said, I'm going to learn to tat. Mm-hmm. All I need now is a shuttle. So she says, well, run down to the store and get your shuttle. At that time, you could buy them anywhere.
They're valuable now.
They're valuable, and it's hard to find them.
Were they metal shuttles?
No, they were bone.
Bone.
Tortoise shell.
And bone. And now they make them out of plastic.
And did you bring a shuttle over with you at all?
Yes, I brought one.
There you go. All right, this is the little shuttle.
I'm doing double tatting. Well, anyway, I learned to tat, and I made several of these baby outfits, a tatted cap and the little booties to match. Oh, where's the other one? I drop it?
You did. It's down here under you. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Essentially, what you're doing with tatting is using this little shuttle as a holder for your thread.
Yes.
And as a device to pass the thread through and do a series, like a senate of almost half hitches around a thread.
They are half hitches.
Okay, and you're making looped patterns that you join together in certain designs. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this cap doesn't have a needle stitch in it except sewing the bows on, the rosettes on. Everything else is put together with the
It's tatted together, huh?
Uh-huh. Everything's tatted. And this is an original design. I made it up as I went along because I didn't have anything to go by when I was making this.
Did you ever have any patterns?
Yes. I have bought several, but I have a habit of lending things and forgetting to whom I loaned it.
And then they forget from whom they borrowed it.
Exactly.
Which is the worst, yes.
Now, this is the crochet. And my aunt, my father's oldest sister, taught me to crochet when I was 8 years old.
Do that with one needle or two? Crochet.
I crochet with one needle.
Have you ever seen anybody crochet with two needles?
I really don't know anything about it.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe you knew something I didn't, because crochet is a one needle. It's a needle with a hook on the end of it, as opposed to knitting, which is two needles with points.
Okay. Yes.
I made several afghans and baby sets like this and edging.
How do you get the thread onto the shuttle?
You have to take this out and wind it by hand.
I see.
See, it slips out.
Yeah, it springs out, huh?
Now, the bone shuttles work open at the ends like this, and you just run around and around and around and around, and after a while, they were filled. Now you have to take, this will fit on some machines, but it won't fit on mine, so I have to take it out and wind it by hand.
Oh, you could put it on a sewing machine, you mean?
Yes.
Like you fill your bobbin.
Your little bobbin, but this won't fit mine. My bobbins are smaller than this and wider, and it won't fit mine. Uh-huh. So I have to do it by hand.
All right.
And when it's filled, I just stick it right in there until it pops together.
Did you ever see your family or your family members doing any of these handcrafts? Did your mother do anything like that?
Yes, my mother crocheted with yarn. She wouldn't fool with thread. She said it was too slow.
Oh.
She used yarn. She crocheted sweaters for me and for members of the family. All right. But she never used thread. She said it was entirely too slow. She did not learn to tap. She said that was too tedious.
You said that you learned a lot of this from you married a Menorcan family.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
What about your husband's family?
My mother-in-law did a lot of crochet, but she didn't tat. I was the only one in the family that made the tatting.
Crocheting, it was another craft that became very popular in the 19th century.
Yes.
It's an early 19th century.
My mother-in-law and I used to sit together and crochet. She would send off and get directions, and she'd say, now, I can't read these directions. You'll have to read them. I would have to make it, and then she would count the stitches and copy it.
Okay, Pam, talk to me a few minutes about what you're doing, because this is another very old and well-loved thing. It dates at least from the 18th century in Florida, and this is more or less an outgrowth of the palm braiding that we were talking about. You have hats mm-hmm. here, all right? Where did you learn to make your hats?
My grandmother on my mom's side. She makes palm out of hats, and I got interested in it, and she showed me how to make them.
How long ago did you start making these?
About a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Oh, so you're really very new at this. But that's mm-hmm. important. One lady asked us in an interview yesterday what each one of these craftspeople is doing to pass this along. And I think that that's a very vital part of it. Not only that we've revived an interest in it, or that you who've been working at it all your lives have had it, but that the next generation that's coming along should find an interest in this, too, and should learn how to do it. And
well, I'll tell you how I'm passing on tatting. I'm a member of the Homemakers in St. Augustine, and I give demonstrations of how to tat. And there's a lady talking to me earlier, and she's from St. Petersburg, and she says, how on earth am I going to get with you to learn?
Do you have many students in your class?
A few.
It's interesting to know how possibly young people don't want to know how to do these things.
No,
that's frightening.
Well, there is a whole generation coming. I think Pam is right. Important proof of that, as a matter of fact.
So Pam's age is where the secret is.
Pam is a 4-H girl. Tell them some of the honors you won 4-H.
Well, I went to up to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. from doing a demonstration of 4-H. I'm making a cast net.
Do netting also? Mm-hmm. Oh, terrific. All right, let's keep talking about this. All right, where did you learn to do netting? Or do you call it knitting?
Netting.
Netting? Because mm-hmm. I learned to make Spanish bag nets from Ada Miker. All right.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. And she always called it knitting to me.
Oh.
All right.
I make a cast net.
All right. Do you make the English or the Spanish net?
The Spanish, I think.
Okay, with a bag on the bottom of it, so you fold it up, or is it just open?
Just open.
Okay, that's the English net.
English.
Okay, the Spanish has a bag. At the bottom of it. Okay, and so you went to Washington one time
mm-hmm.
for that?
For a week.
Fantastic. How did you do in Washington?
Well, it was just a week for a camp, like, mm-hmm. it was just, we went to many tours and visited all the different places that were in, and museums and that.
Did your family ever push you, I don't want to use the word push, did they ever guide you toward this, did they ever encourage you to learn these crafts, or have you just seen these things around in your house all your life?
I've just seen them and took an interest to it.
Huh? What other kind of things do you see going on in your house? What other kind of handcrafts?
Well, it's mainly my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She does crocheting also.
She's still living?
Mm-hmm.
She's still with you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You've done one particular, what amounts to a basic kind of braid style here for the hat. Have you learned any other braid styles yet?
No.
Do you plan to?
Well, this is the only one that I can do so far.
Uh-huh. Does she do others?
No, this is the only type.
Have you ever seen any of the other craftswomen around St. Augustine who work with Palmetto hats?
No, ma'am.
Okay, what we ought to do is get you over to Gainesville one day and into the museum collections. In the 19th century, these were a very popular item, and they were one of the largest export items, tourist items from Florida, as a matter of fact. Big sunbonnets and pocketbooks. And let's see, I even saw an armadillo-shaped platter one time.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, made out of palm weaving. So there are all kinds of things you can do with this. And it gets very intricate. There's
well, now she's been to Gainesville with 4-H.
Mm-hmm.
Short courses.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Are there any other crafts besides those two that you're picking up from your family that you want to get? You're just concentrating on those two right now.
Yeah, too.
Do you know any other the people your age, the young people who are picking these things up, or do you feel like you're kind of alone out there?
Kind of alone.
Do any of the others express an interest in it?
Yeah, they seem to.
They don't say, God, like Pat, that's a weird Pam, that's a weird hat you got there.
No. They all like it.
Do they want to learn from you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go back and talk about the Women's Exchange for a few minutes and what you were doing down there. You said that you wanted to go to work for the Women's Exchange.
Well, we did. We worked and put pieces of work, Spanish work, in the exchange. But before we did, we had to take lessons from that old lady that was giving us lessons. It was six or eight of us in that picture.
Did you have to take lessons from her particularly for mm-hmm. the Women's Exchange?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Before they would let us put the work in the Women's Exchange and sell it. We used to sell it, and they would buy their linen, and if they wanted us to make a scarf or some kind of a piece for them, well, they would pay us for the work we'd make in it. But then towards the last, we bought our own, we made our own patterns, you know, like little pin cushions, and And my cousins and myself, the boy that's making popping the whip, that's my cousin. And
his two
two sisters and myself, and they used to make the little long pin cushions, and I used to make the square ones.
Uh-huh.
But we used to take and make it solid, draw and make a solid square of Spanish work. And we'd put a little edge, and you draw it with a pencil, and we'd make like a buttonhole stitch, and it would be like, I had a piece of work up there that you could attach them to each one of the corners. But we made our little cushions out of some color, like pink or yellow or blue or green or whatever color we wanted, or silk.
Right.
And then we took about an inch ribbon and made that like into a box, because if you cut it square, exactly square, the same size, you take that ribbon and start, and you go all the way around into the corners. You would fix it up where it would, the other bottom size would fit right into it, and it would fit perfect.
Right.
Then when we were going to fill it, they made us fill it with lamb's wool that they used to get from the mountains somewhere. I don't know where it came from.
Right.
But they said the pins would not rust if you stuck them in that pin cushion. And I saw quite a few of them.
Well, of course, because the lamb's wool has so much lanolin.
Yes, ma'am, I guess
right.
So. And that's why we stuffed them. And then you'd tuff them, when you made a little pillow, I'd put dance in it where I'd put the thread and go through one side, and then I'd tie a knot where it would draw it up, where it would look like a quilting, I guess, or whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Tacked it. Mm-hmm. And then I'd tack my Spanish work, the four corners, and hook that little cover on there. And then if that cover got dirty in any way, they could take it off and wash it. And they didn't ruin the little cushion, see, but that cover.
Two other things I want to bring up. Have any of you ever done bobbin lace?
I've seen it, but I have not done it.
Do you know of people in St. Augustine who do bobbin lace?
I do not.
All right, because this is another 18th century craft that was very much loved in Spain and is still practiced in a lot of Spanish countries. And this is one of the things that a young girl learned to do as a part of her education. Not only the general sewing or making a trousseau or doing the drawn work. How about macrame? Have you ever done macrame?
Yes.
I've never done it.
Yes.
All right. Have you done it like within the last few years when the craze hit, or did you do it before then?
Oh, the last 5 years.
All right.
I made a macrame bag and some macrame hangers for, hanging baskets. But I didn't care for it.
All right. Most people aren't familiar with this either. We had such a craze of macrame about 5 or 6 years ago that everybody just assumes that the sailors have been the prime keepers of macrame, and they have to a certain extent, but macrame is one of the oldest decorative art forms known to man. As a matter of fact, we have Coptic pieces from Egypt that have macrame insertion. And in the 18th century, Spanish macrame was renowned, as a matter of fact.
Really?
It's very fine work, and it's very beautiful. And you used it for insertion pieces, like lace insertion that you put in a towel, mm-hmm. the end of a mm-hmm. towel, or a decorative piece on the bottom of a petticoat.
I thought it was invented about 10 years ago.
When the craze took over. Everybody had to have a macrame bag.
Yeah. And I just wondered if both of those had ever, either of those had ever survived in St. Augustine. Have you ever seen your grandmother do either one of those?
No.
How about crewel embroidery?
Yeah, there's a lot of that
done. Do you do crewel work?
I don't. But I've seen, my sister-in-law does it.
Okay. Do you do cotton embroidery at all?
I don't do any embroidery.
What is cotton embroidery?
Well, cotton would just be using cotton floss as opposed to crewel embroidery, which means specifically two-strand wool embroidery. Crewel thread. Crewel refers to the thread.
I don't do it. Naturally, I don't do it because I had to ask.
Okay. All right. The other point that I wanted to bring out had to do with you, though, hon.
What's that?
All right. Because you are not Menorcan.
No.
All right. And you're not married to a Menorcan.
No.
But you're into a craft which was very much a part of the Menorcan repertoire.
Right.
And you're into it because of one facet of Menorcan life that I believe, that historians believe, was probably the strongest tie in all of Menorcan life, and that is,
the Catholic faith,
you
mean?
The Catholic faith.
Sure.
That's exactly
right. Exactly.
All right.
During
because
that
you're
period,
Italian, right?
No, I'm French.
French?
All French, all the way.
She married an Italian.
I'm married an Italian. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm from Louisiana. I'm French. But, I feel very, very grateful to the Menorcans, very grateful, in St. Augustine and in our part of Florida, because when the English, when the British were in town from 63 to 83 in the 1700s,
right.
The Spaniards left. They went back to Cuba and they went to various other places and took the Catholic faith with them. And had the Menorcans not come, St. Augustine might be an English settlement today. and we would not have such a strong Catholic church there. I feel they saved it for us.
Well, the British did make a large concession when they allowed the Menorcans to practice their Catholic faith.
They sure did.
Fact, they made a very large, unique concession because they didn't always allow that concession in their other colonies.
That's true, because they had taken Catholic churches and used them for their own Episcopal faith.
Well, Turnbull had played a little game, you see, when he brought the Menorcans to begin with.
Yeah,
the contract said that he was only supposed to bring white Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
And since he was married to a Greek woman, he felt that the Greek women were very beautiful and that the Greek men were industrious. And so he decided that since the Greeks were not Roman Catholics, they might vaguely be construed as Protestants. And he had no idea whatsoever that he was going to bring Menorcans with him, as a matter of fact. He stopped at Menorca because it was a British-held island to take on supplies. And it had been a very bad year for the Menorcans, who were a pastoral economy. And instead of the 500 he'd hoped, or the 800 he'd planned for, or the 500 he thought he'd done was going to get, he wound up with 1,400. And the majority of those were Roman Catholics.
Catholics.
Right. And they brought their own priests. No Greek Orthodox priests came, only two Roman Catholic priests.
Uh-huh.
And so they practiced Catholicism. All right. And this is, you know, no matter what your religion is today or what your considerations are, I think that this point has a very strong tie with the handcrafts that you're seeing practiced here, because it was the religion, I believe, that was a major facet in keeping these families cohesive.
Definitely.
And reestablishing that cohesion after they left New Smyrna, after only 600 survivors made it out of 1,400 in New Smyrna. And it's that cohesion that's allowed you to hold on to these crafts and to pass them along from family to family. Okay, you're Solano, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Solano is one of the two oldest documented family names in America.
Yes.
Are you aware of that?
Yeah.
You realize that? We have parish records that date to 1594 in St. Augustine for the Solano and the Sanchez families. And Pacetti?
That's an old family.
That's another one that was, as a matter of fact, was an Italian name, if I recall.
Yes, it is Italian. Well, you know, the Balearic Isles, all those, the islands of Mallorca and Menorca and
Ibiza.
How many others?
Ibiza.
They were all kind of resorts for the rich Italians, the rich Spanish, and the rich French. They all mix, and the Greeks. And so it's really, when you say Menorcan, it's a mixture.
Quite a mixture.
And I used to argue with my father-in-law because he said he was pure Spanish, and I said, there's no such thing as pure Spanish. This is off, isn't it?
No, it's not off. You keep talking.
And he would say,
now we're going to get all the secrets.
I am pure Spanish. And I said, you're not pure Spanish. Don't you know they're half Arabs? And then I said, the Moors came from Arabia and all like that.
They ran the Moors out, but they left
them. We ran out. I said, that's what he told me. He says, but we got rid of them. I said, but they left their imprint.
Oh, boy, did they ever. Well, if you look at the brown skin that we wear today, you know they left their imprint, as a matter of fact.
Well, I came, you're talking about Georgia. I came from Georgia to teach school.
Uh-huh.
And I taught at Mill Creek for 46 years.
Oh, my Lord.
The one school.
Uh-huh.
And retired. I've been retired now for 8 years.
Teresa, what is your family name?
Triai.
I was Masters in Triai. My mother was a Masters. My daddy was a Triai.
Okay. Masters originally was Maestre, the Spanish. It's one of the few Spanish names that transliterates literally into English. So we have Masters today instead of Maestre. Okay. What are you doing with these handcrafts today? What kind of a market is there for these today, or are you just using
them? Would be a good market if I would make them, but teaching school and taking care of a family and going to school at the same time, I didn't have much time for this, and I made most of these as christening presents. I made 5 or 6 of these sets. I have 2 nieces, and one has had 4 children, the other 7. Well, all 11 children were baptized in the same outfit. And now the great-grandchildren are coming in. I mean, the grandchildren are coming in using the same outfit.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And I was in Orlando to see my oldest.
You'll be handed down, huh?
Yes, yep. My oldest niece back in April. And she says, Aunt Thelma, don't you want to see your little dress? And I said, which dress? And so she showed me how she's keeping the cap and the booties and the dress.
Pam, what are you doing with yours? I know that you've had me begging you for 24 hours to make one. Are other people after you to make these hats?
Yes, a lot of them.
Not. What are your plans? Would you like to broaden your horizons a little bit and sell some of these?
Well, I'd like to, but since I go to school and everything, it's just a good pastime for me whenever I have extra time.
Do all the members of your family have hats now?
Just about.
Yeah. Well, she's the only child in her family.
Oh, you are? You don't have brothers and sisters, huh?
Yeah. Okay. The only one.
Teresa, what are you doing with yours? Do you still sell your pieces, or what do you do with
them? No, ma'am, I don't. I'm too old to sell them. I'm 71 years old.
What's old got to do with it?
Well,
she's nothing. I'm 75.
See there?
Well, I tell you, I had this Spanish work is a terrible on the eyes, and it took a lot out of my eyes when I was making it, because when I was a kid, I used to sit down on the floor at night and make my pieces by old kerosene lamp, and that was hard on the eyes, which I never should have tried to do. And then now I've contacted, cataracts in both of my eyes.
Uh-huh.
And now I've had one operated on this eye. The right eye's been operated on. He'll take the stitches out Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
And he said I'll be able to see it, and hoping that I'll be able to go back and make some. I'd like to make it. Just
what did you... Go ahead.
I like to eat. You can tell how big I am. I like to eat, but I'd rather sit down and eat it. I make this all day long.
Would you really?
I really do. I love to make it.
Now, what you're making here, hold this up. Let us see how big this is.
It's a scarf.
Okay. Here, excuse me, just one second.